This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه ومن والاه. Welcome everybody to the Safina Society Nothing But Facts live stream on a Thursday, which season you don't know we're in. Who knows? Are we in the spring? Are we in the fall? Subhanallah, it's warm out. Nobody's wearing jackets. Supposed to, the leaves are changing color, so, you know, maybe global warming is taking its hold on the state of New Jersey. But we're getting the, really, in one hand, we're getting the good of it because we're getting Carolina weather these days. We're here filming and brought to you, or streaming and brought to you by GRT, Global Relief Trust. And let's get straight to it because I don't like long introductions. I was in a drive the other day, and I had a long drive, and I was listening to a podcast. I'm not even kidding you. The introduction was 7 minutes long. Did anyone advise this guy? He wasn't a Muslim guy. He was a regular guy. But let me start off right away on, what's her name? HChen177, Sister HChen177. The question on careerism and family, which one should a woman choose? I mean, if it had to be a choice. If you had to focus on one or the other. If you had to prioritize, and we posted the clip, I said, it's family. She took offense to that. Why is a man being asked to advise a young woman what a one young woman should do? Maybe it's not offensive, but it's just, she said, surely it would be another experienced one best to advise based on her experience, exclamation point. Number one, I totally agree. How about if I responded to you and telling you I'm answering based on what women said? Firstly, it was a woman who asked the question. But what if I respond to you and tell you that my answer is taqlid? It's a transmission. And which woman? I could tell you many women. I could tell you my wife. I could tell you my mom. I could tell you my mother-in-law. I could tell you Fatima Zahra, radiallahu anha. So why would you discount that knowledge is transmitted? Why would we discount? Is this like technology where it's totally new and we have no possible other answers except for what we've come up with? Wouldn't, after all these years of human life, people have talked about this before and answered the question and discussed it amongst themselves, and you'll hear it, and you'll hear that there are pretty much certain accepted things that all both genders know about each other. Can a woman guide a man? Because all custody in divorce cases of the boys goes to the mom. So clearly, at some point, moms can advise and guide their sons, right? Well, can the opposite happen? Can dads advise their daughters? And for your information, the four women, adult women that are in my life, they're all full-time professionals. Two of them MDs, one a PhD, one a master's, and all of them had full-time careers. And they all say the same thing. So does it count now? Does my answer count now? Or is it just not going to count because even the transmitter has to be a woman? Anyway, then let's see, some other people chimed in and agreed, but it's really the same answer because certain information, certain knowledge about human life is sort of transmitted to both genders. And it's been now how many thousands of years of humans living and answering certain questions? So that's my response. But overall, I do agree with the main premise that women should advise other women, but I would put that in conditions. A, it's not going to be everything. Certain things guys will know about women and women will know about guys. I mean, all over TikTok these days, you know that we're starting the marriage thing, right? So I went in and I started typing in marriage and I want to see what people are saying. We started the marriage mentorship operation and it's called starboardmarriage.com. So I want to see what's being said out there in the public sphere. The majority of advice to men comes from women. You know that, Omar? The majority of, I would say maybe like majority as in 60-40. Maybe even more.
If you're counting like mothers?
Yeah.
Mothers are number one advisors for their kids, like especially your son.
No, I'm saying that's 100% true, but on TikTok.
Online.
Yeah, on TikTok, the influencers that are telling men how to be better husbands, it's coming from women, right?
Isn't she advising you, by the way, or like by saying that?
That is, I guess, a piece of advice, yeah.
Yeah, she's saying don't do this.
So when we talk about what women only could talk to women about, it's going to be a limited set. There's going to be certain things, revelation has told us. So women and men will know what is best for women and men, what is prohibited and obligatory and advisable and discouraged if revelation tells us. So the mothers of the believers are essentially the explanation of the sunnah. They know best how to live in terms of, they know best what the prophet meant when he taught about men and women and husbands and wives. Number two, the Quran itself gives us certain things. Number three, what about if I were to draw analogies? What was the first gift that Hawa was given? Obviously, it was a husband. Like, as soon as that was the first thing she was given, she was created married. Can therefore there be anything greater than that for a woman? So I'm taking that from revelation. We don't need to ask. I got revelation. I have to just ask if I understood that properly. So there's that. There's universal wisdoms, which I'm referring to as well, and we can all refer to. Universal wisdoms. Life experience has been transmitted for hundreds of years that we all know. Your grandma knows it. My grandma knows it. My grandfather knows it. Your grandfather knows it about men and women. And then there are certain things, like in our household, and I don't like to really talk about my private life, but in our household, we have boys and girls. And there are certain things I don't go near. They have to do with girls. My wife handles that. And there are certain things that have to do with boys, and I handle that, right? So we have to say with tafsir, but such a basic thing as what is greater in a person's life, a family or a career, is not one of those things. That's a universal wisdom. That's, you can even glean it from revelation. It is something that anybody can talk about. And on top of that, it would be my advice to men too. Your family is going to bring you more happiness than your career for a man too. Next subject. What's happening with our man on GRT, Omar? Yeah.
But besides that, like, alhamdulillah, like, he's good. That's the important.
So he's alive and well and he's working. Yeah. Very good. Very good. Let's read a little bit from Ar-Risal Al-Qushayriya. How was that, Omar? Did I come off antagonistic?
No,
I'm replying. I'm not antagonistic. And I can't read the tone of her voice. Although there were some other snarky comments under it that she was engaging with, but who cares? It happens. Let's take a look at Imamuna Al-Jalil Al-Qushayri. Qala fi tarki al-ma'asi. leaving off sins. How does leaving off sins happen? And there's a lot of advice on leaving off sins, but ultimately he talks about something about settling in the heart that Allah's watching you. And the moment it settles in your heart that Allah Ta'ala is watching you, then your desires leave you. Your false desires, your bad desires will depart from you if it enters your mind or your heart that Allah's watching. Not only that, it would leave you if it enters your heart that people are watching you. If it enters your heart that human beings are watching you, then those desires leave your heart. And moreover, of course, if Allah is watching you. فَعِنْدَ ذَٰلِكَ يَخْلُصُ إِلَىٰ قَلْبِهِ صَادِقُ النَّدَمُ. The moment you start to realize that Allah is watching you, then those desires literally will transform into adab and shame. Shame is a good thing. Shame is that it's a force in the heart that stops you from doing something bad in front of somebody noble. That's what we mean by shame. Okay. I'm sure there are many definitions in the books. Haya, what is haya? Stahi. فَيَتَأَسَّفُ عَلَى مَا عَمِلَهُ. Now then, when you contemplate that Allah is watching you, يَتَأَسَّفْ عَلَى مَا عَمِلَهُ. He feels bad about what he did. وَيَأْخُذُ فِي التَّحَسُّرِ عَلَى مَا ضَيَّعَهُ مِنْ أَحْوَالِهِ. And he now starts to regret wasting his opportunities of the past and what he lost. And وَمَرْتَكَبَهُ مِنْ قَبِيهِ أَعْمَالِهِ. And the sins that he performed, he'll feel bad about it. فَتَتِمُّ تَوْبَتُهُ. Now his tawbah will be complete. وَتَسْدُقُ مُجَاهَدَتُهُ. Now, the more you realize Allah is watching you, the more effort you'll put in. And the more you realize that Allah's reward for you are limitless, the more sidq you'll put in the worship. Sidq refers to not leaving any stone unturned, right? Not leaving a single stone unturned is the real explanation of sidq, or the definition of sidq. Ikhlas is having only one purpose. Now, you could have a totally pure intention, but you're lazy. It happens all the time. You could have a pure intention, but that person's lazy. And you could have sidq. You are a hard worker, you leave no stone unturned, but you're distracted. You're serving multiple purposes. And that's the problem. That's what munafiqs and hypocrites, they fool us with. He's such a hard worker. He leaves no stone unturned, but what's his motive? We assume the two are the same. It's not the case. And why doesn't Allah give success to someone very sincere? He has got one motive in life. Well, the answer, he's not a hard worker. He lacks sidq. He's not a hard worker. He doesn't seek advice. He doesn't want to go into high pressure scenarios. He's afraid. Things like that. So how is he going to get success? So once you imagine in your heart and in your mind the immense reward, and you visualize the reward, at-tasawwur, at-takhayyul, really, khayal, they say that at-tasawwur is an Arabic word that relates to abstractions. Wal-khayal is an Arabic word that relates to imaginations of physical things, imagining physical things. But sometimes when you're only using one of them, they could be synonymous. Either ijtama iftaraq with iftaraq ijtama possibly could apply to that. So when we say tasawwur, we mean takhayyul, right? Meaning try to draw the picture in your head of what a reward Allah is going to give me. And you people have a shortage of imagination in this, because Allah Ta'ala is grand, and the Prophet ﷺ said, do not limit. If you ask, don't limit your ask. Expand your ask, because Allah Ta'ala, nothing is too small for him. Okay, nothing is too small. No, sorry, nothing is too big for him.
So, Arif, with the, sorry to cut you off, with the 80 Australian dollars donation. Thank you for that. Jazakallah khair. And he asked,
if Allah has already decreed everything and knows what is best for us, why are we given the opportunity to ask? Ah, excellent. When you make a dua and your dua is answered, what just happened? Did I instigate a response from God? So was God creating things and then I asked him to give me a job, so he created a job for me? No, that's not what happens. When your dua is answered, something that has pre-eternally been decreed by Allah, qada, manifests for you. His pre-eternal decree manifests for you. All right, so now you'll ask a follow-up question. So if I didn't ask, make dua for it, would it have happened anyway? The answer is yes. So then, you now you ask a third question. Then what's the point of making dua? Because when you get something after dua, you're getting a lot with it. Blessing, nearness to Allah, increase in iman, intimacy between you and your creator, a feeling of certainty that this dua is not only something that came in my life, but is something Allah is blessing, because I believe and feel it's an answer to my prayer. It is an answer to your prayer. It just wasn't something that Allah had not preordained. He had already preordained it. It wasn't something, a new idea that you gave God. That's the difference. God's knowledge is never on the increase or on the decrease, such that God doesn't know what's going to happen tomorrow, or that based on how you behave, I'm going to create tomorrow. Based on what you do today, I'm going to create a risk for tomorrow. No, all of it's preordained. It's called qada, and it will manifest at the time that he has already preordained it. That's called qadar. Al-qada wal-qadar. So it exists in the knowledge of Allah, and then he manifests it into its physical form when he wills. He has already willed everything. He has already willed what's going to manifest into the world tomorrow and in an hour, and so on and so forth. So, but when it comes with dua, it comes with so many blessings. It comes with so much goodness. When it comes with sins, the same thing could have been acquired through sins. So I had a $500,000 in my bank account. It's not even a lot of money. It sounds like it's a lot, but it's not. $500,000 in my bank account. How was it acquired? Was it acquired after hard work and dua? Dua alone and no hard work? Yeah, could have been inheritance. Could be a gift. Theft? Or is it a routine check that I get all the time because I'm in some field where people pay me $500,000 for my services? There are a lot of fields like that, where your end of the bargain will be, let's say, $1 million. By the time taxes, agent, lawyer fees, all that comes out of it, you come home with $500,000. And in that case, one of them comes, the one that comes with dua and hard work, that's the best. The one that came with dua, but you just inherited it, that's second best. The one that came by theft, of course, it's cursed. The other two come with so much blessing, so much wisdom. For the one who worked for it, he's learned now. What about the one that's routine? That's a routine deposit in my account. It comes with nothing, right? By itself. So when we receive something with dua, we're receiving a lot more. Receiving a lot of spiritual blessings alongside with that thing that we're receiving. Thirdly, the goal of dua is not only to receive stuff. We got to understand that too. That's not the goal of dua, just to receive stuff. The goal of dua is, it is our connection with our Creator. It's our connection with our Creator. The role of dua is that actually puts us where we belong in the universe, in the world, in the creation. What do we mean by that? As a slave who is in need of his creator. A creation in need of his creation. When you do that, you're swimming in your orbit properly. When you don't do that, you're not in your orbit in the right way. You see? You're out of orbit. You're better in orbit when you're making dua, because that's where you belong. Where does this phone belong? It doesn't belong in the water. It should be used to make calls, not to swat flies, not to hammer nails, right? So use the phone the way it should be used. You'll benefit from it most. It shouldn't be used in anything that's going to break it. Okay? It should just be used for what I'm... shouldn't be used for crime. Then it's going to be a piece of evidence against me. You understand now the answer to that? Mr. Australian. Irtiza Arif asked a very, very good question, as, you know, what's his name says. Brother asked a good question. Huh? Brother asked a very good question. Yep. He then says, how is sincerity achieved? How is sincerity sharpened? Sincerity sharpened by worshipping Allah alone. It's from Imam Malik, when Ibn Wahb came to Malik and he asked him, what is this light that I see in you? And Malik said to him, worship Allah alone in private more than you do in public. Then Allah Ta'ala puts a light in your heart. Okay. And that's could be found in Qadi Ayyad's books. And I could probably get you the quote from this book by Ahmed Tahar Ayyan. Okay. He then continues, وَلَنْ يَتِمَّ لَهُ شَيْءٌ مِّنْ هَذَا إِلَّا بَعْدَ فَرَاغِهِ مِنْ إِرْضَاءِ خُصُومِهِ. So none of this could actually occur. Sincerity, having one directedness towards Allah Ta'ala, cannot occur if you're busy trying to get revenge from your opponents or impress other people in the creation. Okay? Because you're thinking of creation. You can't look sideways and up at the same time in this world. The way Allah made our neck, you can't look sideways and up. You can't look down and up. You can't look to the back and up at the same time. So if you want to look forward, you have to stop looking side. That's why they put blinders on the horses. And this is why people, after they've been plucked out and removed from situations with people like this, their mind can be clear. Sayyidina Musa alayhi salam experienced that. He had a terrible, terrible experience with the Pharaoh. And Allah Ta'ala granted him 10 years. And Abdul Qadir Jailani, in one of his speeches, said that one of the wisdoms behind this is to clear his mind from the creation. To clear his mind. So all he was doing was herding sheep and goat in Arabia all that time, in Midian all that time. To clear his mind. So what does he say? He said every day a person should have a little bit of that. We're not going to go a long period of time. COVID may never happen again. And even when it came upon us, people couldn't take it anymore. And that wasn't even solitude. That was like, you were still with your home, in your home. You were still with computers. It wasn't true solitude. Okay? So a few minutes a day. And solitude should not be overdone either. You can make yourself go crazy. You can actually damage yourself if you're alone too much. People who are, it's talking the other day about social, people who are like antisocial. And sometimes there are reasons. Most of the time there are reasons. People are antisocial. It's not a natural thing to be totally alone all the time. You're not going to know norms. That's the problem. There are certain norms you need to know. What's talking too much? What's oversharing? Right? What do the kids say these days? Too much information? How do I know what's too much information? And that's why I think schooling and siblings and friends, why are they sometimes the best source of information? Because they don't have manners. They don't have a concept of, hold on, those are your friends' feelings. Like, you know, kids don't have that concept. Don't hurt your friends' feelings. No, they don't hurt your classmates' feelings. They don't have that concept, so they say really mean things. But in the process, you might actually learn something that your real friends were too embarrassed to tell you, right? Enemies are great. Enemies are wonderful. And in your household, if you have somebody who tells you the truth, you need to value that. I do personally. I always ask and get good answers. Like, how, what did you think of this, that, or the other? And some, and they tell me sometimes, oh, this is, this was no good. This was, you know, too hard on women. I get these answers sometimes, and I have to review myself. But I only accept it from someone of taqwa and brains, intellect. Taqwa, fear of Allah. And also, you know how they live. That's a beautiful thing about taking advice from your family and stuff, is that, and your friends, you know how they live. Right. Whereas I can't take advice from a stranger online. I don't know what background they're coming from. So if I see someone lives the life of taqwa, lives a life of masajid, has been doing this for 10 years, 15 years, 30 years, been living a life of taqwa and deen, I'm going to take their advice. I'm going to accept it from them. Right. Yeah. What were we saying? Oh, we were saying about solitude. Yeah, because when you go to school, and this is what happens, and I'm not saying anything bad about homeschoolers. If a homeschooler, if doesn't supplant the homeschooling and add to it some socialization with strangers, strangers that you selected, like a group of people, like a soccer team or whatever, those strangers, when they say something, that's great information, feedback loop on society. I need that feedback from society, right? So I walk in society and kids make fun of me. Well, why are they making fun of me? They're making fun of me because I got mud all over my pants. All right, that's a good piece of information. It was maybe transmitted in a mean way, but guess what? They'll never do it again. They're making fun of me because it smelled bad. Well, that's good. Let it happen once in your life early. You know, as they say in business, fail early. Right? In business, they say, fail early. So I know it's a feedback loop. Why is it that the best, most successful people in business are just the oldest guys? They have more information. They've been failing and succeeding. They have so much information, so much knowledge. It's not that they're smarter than you. They have more information. Why is Iblis tricking us all the time? He's been around for thousands of years. Even if we say that he did not have a great intellect, according to some of the ulama, they say the jinn don't have great intellects. Even if that, if you just live for 10,000 years, that'll do the trick. You'll be light years ahead of everybody else. One of the reasons, like New England Patriots, now it's the Kansas City Chiefs. One of the reasons they keep winning is because these guys have been together so long. They know so much. The plays just move on. Come off them so easily. But look, go look at the other teams. They're like in constant fluctuation. Coaches out, quarterbacks out, Miami Dolphins out, right? Their quarterback is gone. Jets coach is gone. How are they going to compete when you guys keep changing? These guys who have been doing the same thing every single year have gotten so much better at what they do just on repetition. Not on genius, not on anything else, just on repetition. Just on more hours at doing the same old play. Same thing with Iblis. If right now I play chess, I don't pay much attention to chess, so I lose all the time, right? I never tried. I never really gave it any effort. So if you put a chessboard in front of me right now, I'll probably lose 10 out of 10, right? But if I try to play chess and I lived 400 years, I will be better than the greatest player alive. If I cared about chess and I played casually, but I care, but casually, not professionally, for 400 years, I'm going to have so much more information than the latest Russian chess master that comes out of Moscow, right? Every year, I'll beat him because I have far more information than he does. He's maybe smarter because he maybe got half of my information in 2 decades that I took me 400 years to get. I'll still trounce him, right? Just on the fact of repetition. So that's where being antisocial is not a good thing from that angle. But what angle it is it good from? It is good in that if you can sit alone by yourself and be happy, it's very hard for people to buy you out, right? So to give an example, who was it recently that I was talking to Sheikh Asad. We're talking about Ibn Atta. And Ibn Atta says, no great arif billah lived except he had a period of time, a phase in which he was buried like a seed into the soil and had nobody around him, nothing around him, was nothing socially. Huh? It's from the Hikam. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
He's got it memorized. Darulfats.com.
I've heard that so many times.
So, what happens? That person, number one, how can you upset him, truly upset him, if his happiness can be achieved by himself at home? How can you buy him out if all he needs is to be alone with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to be happy? How can you threaten him with isolation if isolation is his joy? Solitude is his joy, I should say. So even better than that is somebody who knows how to do both. He knows how to go out in society, take the hits, and enjoy the joys of society. And he knows how to go back and enjoy solitude. That is a person that's the best of all states. And very hard to corrupt such an individual. So that's why he says here, وَلَنْ يَتِمَّ لَهُ شَيْءٌ مِنْ هَذَا إِلَّا بَعْدَ فَرَاغِهِ مِنْ إِرْضَاءِ خُصُومِهِ وَالْخُرُوجِ عَمَّا لَزِمَهُ مِنْ مَظَالِمِهِ. He has to fulfill his needs to people. You can't think clearly. You can't have a clear path with Allah when you owe things to people. This is why people in their middle of life are the least interested in spirituality. You know that? It's not that they're least interested. It's that this is like the most impractical time of life to think about yourself. The guy wakes up from the morning until the time he goes to sleep, he's needed, right? He's being pulled at. His work is demanding him from something. The electric company wants something. This bill wants something. Tuition wants something. Everyone is pulling at him 24 hours a day. He gets no time alone. And this is going to happen for about 30, 40 years of his life. Spirituality to him takes a total different meaning. Right? God's help in fulfilling all these responsibilities, that's the spirituality. Right? So, these guys, when you come and talk some abstract talk or some fuzzy-wuzzy talk, their mind isn't working that way anymore. It hasn't worked like that for 30 years. I'm not saying that's good. I'm just saying that's the norm. What is good and what is great is someone that can keep their spirituality alive even in the middle of that period of adult life. By the way, there's pizza time war. Omar, yeah. Fahd, I hereby order you guys to eat this pizza before it gets cold. I know you're not going to do it. I want to eat without you. No, I hereby give you the executive command. Okay? Because that pizza is going to be hot. And Omar already has an answer. You know the answer. Al-adab awla min al-amr. You know that? Manners takes priority over commands. What's the proof of that in the seerah? Did not Sayyidina Ali ibn Abi Talib refuse to erase Muhammad Rasulullah? The Prophet ﷺ said, the Quraysh said, how can we make an agreement with Muhammad Rasulullah when we don't believe you're Rasulullah? No, we're making a deal with Muhammad, son of Abdullah. Prophet ﷺ conceded to this. He said, Ya Ali, erase it. Sayyidina Ali was a scribe at that. Sayyidina Ali took his pen, put it right down. I'm not erasing Rasulullah. And then the Prophet ﷺ said, point it to me and I'll erase it. So he pointed to where it is and the Prophet smudged it with his finger. So it's the Sayyidina Ali refused to do it. That's the example of adab taking priority over... here, Slanovich has a good... He got us out of the fiqhi problem right here. Give me a bite. Therefore, I've eaten, mutlaqul akl, right? And now you guys can eat. You see these guys that take the adab in ilm, and they won't eat until the oldest person in the room has eaten, which is me. So I'm going to take a bite, and therefore, mutlaqul akl has here we go. See this, folks? Nice, beautiful colors. on the pizza. There you go. So I've technically eaten. You know, when the Sharia, when the Quran and the Sunnah, the Nusus say to do something, and they don't give any limit, then the very least becomes the limit. So, for example, Quran says whoever child nurses from a woman, then that is a child of nursing. Right? That is your child of wet nursing. So, but the Quran did not put how much. So, but the Quran does say when is nursing, does give an age later on, and saying that, does tell us that it's 2 years is the nursing period. Right? وَحَمْلُهُ وَفِصَالُهُ ثَلَاثُونَ شَهْرًا 30 months. 30 months minus 9 is 21. So it's around 2 years. Right? Because some people say it's 21, but it's not a human for the first period of time, right? So remove the 3 months of pregnancy, therefore 30 minus 6 months of pregnancy, 24, that's 2 years. We also have from the Sunnah that nursing is 2 years, so that we have. But how much nursing makes a woman the milk mother of a boy or a girl? No mention. Therefore, the bare minimum, one gulp of milk would make that baby the milk child. And therefore, all of her children are milk siblings with that baby. All right? Okay, let's continue here. So this, you have to get rid of your responsibilities, and you need to discharge from your the oppression you may have done to somebody, if there are madhalim. Okay? So the first manzila of tawbah is that you have to fulfill your khusum. Okay? You have a khusum with somebody, you can't have enemies who have a right over you. There can be people who don't like you, right? Some people who don't like us were making fun of one of our friends the other day. I said, I'm like, listen, it's just something we have to fight through. They have no haq. You have the haq. And they just like to jab at you whenever they see you down or in a jam situation or an unfortunate thing happened to you. The best piece of advice to people or in life is to realize that that's going to happen in life. Not everyone's going to like you. And the cost of being liked by a bunch of people is that some people are going to hate you. The cost of being very rich, some people are going to steal from you. Guaranteed, people are trying to steal from you. So when he says irda'ul khusuma, he doesn't mean responding to people who have a dispute with you. He means fulfilling actual debts you owe to people if you have wronged them or if they have a valid debt against you. Okay. فالعزم بقلبه على أن يخرج من حقوقهم عند الإمكان والرجوع إلى الله تعالى بصدق الابتهال والدعاء لهم. All right, what happens when, what do we say about a situation where we don't have, like, there's not a right and wrong, but we just don't like each other and we've hurt each other, right? We've hurt each other. So the answer to that is, you still have to say some kind words at some point so you don't walk away having hurt each other. But not all hurt feelings are valid. We have to understand this. Not all hurt feelings are valid. Just because someone's feelings are hurt does not mean they have a valid claim against you or that anything will be held against you but in the sight of Allah. That just simply is not the case. So you have to keep that in mind. But harshness is not acceptable for a Muslim. To be harsh is not acceptable for a Muslim with another mu'min. Okay. With few exceptions, such as that person is harming the believers, he is a source of dhulm, he is a source of fisq, he's a source of bid'ah, bid'ah fil aqa'id, then yes, we can. Bid'ah fil fiqh, bid'ah in ibadat, could simply be a difference of opinion. In that case, you leave it. You don't make inkar and be harsh on someone on a difference of opinion. Bid'ah muharrama, and he thinks it's okay, he has a ta'wil, but we can say he made a mistake in the ta'wil. That's almost no different than a fatwa that was wrong. That also doesn't deserve harshness. It deserves a response, but not harshness. It's almost like a fatwa that's just, it's wrong. He deserves a correction, but not harshness, and the bonds of brotherhood remain. وللتأبين صفات وأحوال هي من خصاله يعد ذلك من جملة التوبة لكونها من صفاتهم لا لأنها من شرط صحتها وإلى ذلك تشير أقاويل الشيوخ في معنى التوبة سمعت الأستاذ أبا علي الدقاق of course أبو علي الدقاق is the sheikh of القشيري قال التوبة على ثلاثة أقسام توبة is three types أولها التوبة وأوسطها الإنابة وآخرها الأوبة So the first phase of repentance is called توبة I return from this bad action that I've done The next one is الإنابة And the third is الأوبة And if I understand it correctly Let's see if he gives a sharh on it, but from what I understand of it, Toba, stop action. Inaba, regret action. Oba, go back and do good. And when you have a problem with a person, the first thing you do is you stop. Then you have a period of time when your ego has settled down. I feel bad about what I did. But your ego is still, I'm not talking to him still. This is my rival, my enemy. The third phase after that period of time has passed is Oba. I return and be friends with him. And this happens all the time with people. So they're at a feud. Just get them to stop. They still hate each other. Their egos are still boiling. Let that simmer and cool off. And then afterwards, they can become friends again. Okay. Toba. إنابة أوبة فكل من تاب لخوف العقوبة فهو صاحب توبة You stop and you repent just because you're afraid of the sin. Here he gives a commentary on it. That's توبة. ومن تاب طمعا في الثواب Now he makes توبة because he wants the reward of توبة. فهذا صاحب إنابة. ومن تاب مراعاة للأمر ولرغبة في الثواب أو رهبة من العقاب فهو صاحب أوبة. So now if he's greater than that, he repents, he wants to be a good servant of Allah and he cares for the love of Allah. And he lists a number of things here, then that is a person of أوبة. So توبة, إنابة, أوبة. Okay. توبة إنابة and أوبة التوبة صفة المؤمنين توبوا إلى الله جميعا أيها المؤمنون توبة is the attribute of believers What's next? والإنابة صفة الأولياء The أولياء of Allah Allah says وجاء بقلب منيب He came with a heart that has إنابة in it منيب والأوبة صفة الأنبياء نعم العبد إنه أواب Blessed is this slave, he is أواب صفة الأنبياء والمرسلين أبو عبد الرحمن السلمي The famous author said سمعت منصور بن عبد الله يقول سمعت جعفر بن نصير يقول سمعت الجنيد يقول التوبة على ثلاثة معان الندم والعزم على ترك المعاودة إلى ما نهي عنه والثالث السعي في أداء المظالم So the first, he says, this one he describes Tawbah, repentance, as having three parts. Number one, regret. Number two, stopping. Number three, correcting. Correcting what I did wrong. He says that's what Tawbah is. It's on. It's three different phases. All different commentaries that are very beneficial and useful. All right, time for Q&A. Because we got to leave today at 3:15 on the dot. So we don't have too long. And plus, I have to eat this slice of pizza. Although some people are saying it's unhealthy for me. But, you know, you have to eat what your guests bring you. Otherwise, it's bad adab. You know that? It's bad adab to go to someone's house, as some people do, and said, oh, by the way, the invitation's next Saturday. Oh, by the way, I'm this. I'm sugar-free, gluten-free, animal-free, vegetable-free. What the heck? You're making my life difficult now. May sahish. La yasah. All right, let's announce. Who wants to come to NBIC? Who wants to come to New Jersey and attend Darul Fath's venturing onto the Hanafi path, right, with Sheikh Tabriz A'zam and Sheikh Imran Ahmed. Beautiful, beautiful flyer here. How do you sign up? Well, very simply, you go to darulfath.org. Simple. darulfath.org. Go there and sign up. Okay.
Yeah, I can go over some of the stuff real quick. Itinerary.
Yes.
I hope there's not much background noise, but so I'm just going to put up the itinerary. For those of you who know, we had the same or a similar intensive last year,
yeah.
The Embracing the Hanafi Way. It was, mashallah, very, very successful. A lot of people came, and as many of you know who were around during that time, it sold out very quick as well. So if you want to attend, inshallah, sign up as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
Let's see. So I have some of the itinerary and stuff here. So we're going to have Sheikh Tabrizi Azam for the second annual three-day-long immersive intensive program. So the program will dive deep into different facets of the Hanafi tradition. So you have some texts, including some fiqh, usul al-fiqh, aqidah, perhaps some adab slash the tasawwuf. Inshallah, we'll announce some of the texts that will be covered in due time. It's not recorded, and you can find more information on the website, inshallah. So it's going to be starting on Friday, December 13th. And it's going to end on Sunday. And if you guys check the website, inshallah, I sent it in the chat. You can see some of the texts that we covered last year. And then this is just an overview of the different sessions that we have. So Friday, we're going to start at 6 p.m. And then these are all the sessions. And another thing is that all of the, for accommodations, inshallah, we're going to have food provided for everyone. So we're going to have breakfast, lunch, dinner, all that good stuff, good suhbah as well. So make sure to attend. Don't miss out. Sign up as soon as possible. If you want more information, I sent the link in the chat.
And they could sleep in the masjid, right?
I'm not. So last year we did have that, the i'tikaf.
Yeah, i'tikaf.
I'm sure this year is similar, but I don't want to say anything without confirmation.
But are there prerequisites to this?
There are no prerequisites, actually. So you don't have to know Arabic. You don't have to know anything.
Brother and sisters,
yes. It says on the website as well. It's preferred if you studied previously, but it doesn't matter. As long as you can read Arabic script, even if you don't understand Arabic, that's the ideal, right? And I'm sure most people who grew up Muslim, for example, they can read Arabic.
User FY said, why didn't you say Bismillah before you ate the pizza? Oh, I said it in myself. This whole hour is Bismillah, right? There's Bismillah on the whole hour. Okay, let's take a look at this. Have you guys followed Imam Tom versus Mehdi Hassan?
I saw a bit of it.
But I haven't yet seen the interview that Imam Tom did with Muhammad Jalan. See, Mehdi Hassan is from a dying breed, I would say, of Democrat loyalists. I'm not totally against everything Mehdi Hassan does. A lot of it is, firstly, he serves the Muslim identity. I think in Islam itself, he never talks about that. So let's leave that alone. Right, because the guy is a Shia in the first place, so just leave that. Yeah, he's a Shia in the first place. So, but leave that alone, because the guy—I don't even know if he believes in that. He never talks about theology, so we're not going to go there. We just went there, but right. But anyway, leave that alone. He has been a very good debater, I would say. in most of his causes on Islam, Muslim identity, etc. So overall, I'm not so harsh on people, right, when they do a lot of, they have a lot of good positions. On Palestine, he's been very strong, I have to say. His debate, who did he debate? Piers Morgan, debated a lot of people, right? His clips always come up, and I'm impressed with them. So I'm not totally, like, out to destroy the guy. I don't have that attitude towards Mahdi Hassan. I do believe that the Democrat loyalty is dying amongst Muslims. Like, you're getting laughed at. If you're one of these people, you will get laughed at, right? He said, and their argument is that, how could you allow Trump to be president? He's going to be far worse. I have two arguments against that. The first argument is that what you see now takes priority over what may happen in the future. When I'm making any decision, what's happening now is a certainty. You are aiding and abetting killing. In the future, what may happen in the future is also highly likely. No doubt about that. Highly likely. But we just don't know it. It's not certain. And ask any Egyptian, because every Egyptian says, anybody would have been better than Mubarak. Ask any Libyan. Anyone better than Sanusi? Way back in the day, in the 50s. Right? Ask anyone. And Iraq. Anyone but Saddam. Yeah. And you got that. All three of you. Anyone but Hafez al-Assad in Syria. Bashar al-Assad's worse. So the mentality that, you know, like, judge it, that we can pass a judgment on the future, it always fails. So that's number one. Number two, if we're going to be honest, and people really hate this line, the best predictor for future behavior is past behavior. Trump has already been president. It's not like you're putting in an unknown firecracker. He's a firecracker and he's nuts and all that stuff. Fine, we get that. But this is not an unknown. You saw what his past presidency looked like. And we didn't see a lot of bloodshed. That's the truth. We didn't even see a wall. The 2% of it was built. We didn't see a Muslim ban except for a temporary thing that they had on five countries that had terrorist organizations in them. It wasn't like a blanket Muslim ban. Okay. But that's why I think that's the argument that's made against the pro-Harris approach, right? Those are the two arguments. Facts. Yeah.
So one of the other things, if you don't mind me adding something, it's if you have the Republicans and they're already very pro-Israel,
yeah,
putting them into the White House then gives the Democrats an opportunity to become a proper opposition party, mm-hmm, that takes a different position. Meaning if the Democrats lose,
yep,
and they see that they're being punished as a result of this position, right, meaning that 5% that, yep, they lose in certain states is because of this issue.
Yep.
A lot of Democrats are going to change their tune.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you see the Republicans lose, they're still going to be pro-Israel Christian Zionists no matter what you do.
That's a great argument.
So there's no opposition coming.
Get his mic on, please.
Yeah, it's on.
It's on? Pull it up. Let me restate your argument for you.
Yes, sir.
He basically restated the argument, and you probably all heard it, but I'll just say it again. He essentially said that if you punish Democrats this time, you can fix Democrats. The summary of your argument is this. Democrats can be... their behavior can be changed. Republican behavior is fixed. There is no point in dealing with Republicans. They are fixed on this subject. So, but you can injure Democrat, their percentage and their elections in this cycle, and maybe their behavior will change. That's a great point too.
Yeah, because it's the difference between short-termism and long-termism, right? So let's say incrementally Trump is worse. Let's say we concede that. Okay, that's, mm-hmm, fine. Well, if there's already babies being killed, if the houses of every person have been destroyed, incrementally worse is not that much worse, yeah, right? Like, what are you going to do, nuke somebody? Like, mm-hmm, that's really the incrementally worse that you can get to, potentially. So really, you're dealing with two equivalent alternatives.
Yep.
And so even if you get Trump in office, you're not going to see anything that's that bad happen,
yeah,
overseas that's any different from what we're seeing today. And maybe on domestic issues, you see some things that are even better, meaning you might not have to make compromises on certain social issues, mm-hmm, during those 4 years that you would have to make if Democrats, true, were in power.
True. Good point. And the Democrats, when you do give them loyalty, they'll never listen to you again. You're, yeah, just like a lackey. You're just a doormat. You get abused and you still are there for them. That's a type of abused person. You have something to say, Tamar?
Yeah, the way I see the strategy as a voter
Muslim voter was anti-genocide. The way we can punish Democrats is to vote for Green Party. And the way how that happens, you're actually hitting two stones. Two birds with one stone, sorry.
You're saying punish the Democrat by voting to the Green Party.
So therefore, not only are you empowering the Green Party, which is the opposition party, whatever you're empowering them to get to that 5% criteria, obviously they're not going to win this election.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also hurting the Democrats. And therefore, as a result,
Trump
will win, which is instead of you voting directly for Trump.
Yeah.
You could vote indirectly for Trump as a means, you know?
And let's ask this question, and I talked this about this before. I'm waiting for somebody in the political sphere to lead this movement. Register for the Green Party for fun. I can't say this and lead this movement, but just for the heck of it, for the fun of it, it costs us nothing. Like, what does it cost? $80 to sign up for the Green Party and be a member? If 250 Muslims did that, they would be the majority of the Green Party. I'm just waiting for someone like Imam Tom to lead the charge and say, let's do it as an experiment.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen. Yeah.
Since I've been playing politics for a little bit.
Can you lead that?
No, I can push back against it, though.
Okay, let's hear your.
I think as a result of having been out there campaigning and trying to fundraise from the Muslim community, the one downside that I've noticed with what our community has sort of been experiencing is that there's a small sliver of our community that's involved in politics and fundraising. That small sliver has been heavily involved with the Democratic Party, and now they have friends and they have sort of bonds that they've made with that party. And so they're not willing to break out of that mold.
No, they're never going to break.
And so if you're trying to get broader political engagement from the Muslim community, the first step in that is going to be teaching people to get interested in politics. And so that's one challenge, right? So these 250,000 Muslims that could sign up, they don't actually exist yet, meaning that there aren't 250,000 Muslims that are politically engaged 100%. Enough to want to sign up for a political party, because I can't get in this district where I've got around 15% of some towns in my district are Muslim. I think the entire district, it's like 8% Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get 1% of that group of people to sign up to volunteer or to donate. The
consciousness.
It's not even the consciousness. It's that politics has to be learned. It's not a natural process to put in your time for free or to take money out of your wallet and not get a tax deduction for it. Because political donations, they're not tax deductible.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get people to sign up for the Green Party, it might take 2, 3, 4 election cycles. And you also have to remember, in that 2 or 3 election cycle period where you're transitioning people away from whatever party they're affiliated with to the Green Party, now you've become politically irrelevant. Because until you are a majority of the Green Party, it's not as if it's going to be Islamically aligned policies.
Even when you are.
The more Muslim
it gets, the more irrelevant it'll get. It'll be fought and attacked, etc.
Sure, but it could become... So the approach that I took with what I'm doing is I'm running as an independent completely, right? And so, of course, this is not an endorsement of me, right? I'm just one other person out here. But the reason I did that is because in the short term, I didn't want to compromise on certain fundamental Islamic values, right? So the things we learn in class, right? I'm a bad student,
mm-hmm.
but still I know that I can't make compromises on certain Islamic values
mm-hmm.
and affirm those compromises. Yeah. Meaning, by sitting out of a process and not being involved, you're not affirming anything. You're just sitting out. You're sort of boycotting the entire experience.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you actually sign up for that party, you're giving tacit approval to some of the things that they stand for. And so until you have that 250,000 people lined up ready to go, the 10 or 15 people that are signing up then just become the showcase of, look, we've got Muslims too. And then you're just like the people in the Democratic Party today who go and they sit at a fundraiser, they get a party with, they get a picture with a politician. And in exchange for that, now you've got a woman in a hijab and a brother with a beard sitting next to a person who's committing a genocide, and that becomes affirmation for people who aren't digging deep into the issues.
The biggest problem we have is not knowing what our principles are. That's the easy question. The biggest problem we have is that the principled route could very likely lead to irrelevance, which is what you talked about. And that's the debate. And that's what Imam Tom who said that you can be the principled approach, at the very least will be principled, may be irrelevant and may be wrong, because Trump may get in and there is a likelihood that it could get worse. And my opinion is that neither side is any different on Israel. That's my belief. Like, that's my belief. Neither side has a different philosophy towards the lobby. You still don't know what each president would do. I think Biden is in office, it seemed to me, was almost like an absentee presidency. There was an absentee completely, right? Let's look at what this person says. Mohammed Shezli says, very Egyptian, you're applying too many what-ifs to Mehdi Hassan. Think about what's happening every day under this current administration, who's already supported genocide at the fullest scale, versus who may make it worse. Okay? I don't see how it can get any worse. See, I'll never... That's not a correct thing to say. That last line, delete it. Now, Mehdi Hassan says, it can't get worse. Of course it can. Every day it's getting worse. 100%. You think that in 2 years it's not going to be worse than today? It will, because Israel can't put this genie back in the bottle. They have to keep going. It will get worse in the Trump administration. I'm guaranteed, almost 99% sure. Not because of the presidency here. Irrelevant of the presidency. Whether it's Harris or Trump, the next year will be worse. The year after that will probably be worse. Probably until 2030 or for another decade. Okay. Daniel Dumbrill says, don't vote for Stein because Trump might win and the genocide might get worse. Vote instead for the party under which we already know the genocide has continually gotten worse. Which is basically the same idea as what is greater than what if. That's what he said here. Because what is already greater. So he's basically giving that same response. Ultimately,
There's no good answer.
There is no good answer. What's my position regarding someone who's already embedded in the Democratic Party and is trying to make headway? He should continue. But don't tell us and try to convince us that Harris, of all people, who has, like, what has she done in politics that would indicate any future behavior, right? Trump does have an indicator of his behavior, which is that it's always much less than his words. That is, we have facts on that. We have demonstration on that. And I'm not obviously pro-Trump, but what do we have from Harris? Wait, why do we have to ask? She's already in office, right? But you're not gonna look good in the community going with Harris. This is a blemish on any Democrat and loyalist to the Democratic Party. And I know some of them, they won't talk to me anymore. Some of these Democratic loyalists, no, they see me, they look the other way. I'm like, all right, go die with the Democrats then, right? Yeah.
What is our position on principle versus making compromises for political gain? Like, is there a middle ground, or is there a certain threshold of principles that need to be upheld?
I'm going to say that there's no set answer to this. There's no set answer. The future always tells you whether you decided right or wrong.
Because the reason I'm asking is because we've sort of seen that with the Democratic Party. Like, a lot of brothers and sisters got involved with the Democrats, and they made compromises on certain issues, and it didn't really lead to much, right? It's almost as if when you compromise on certain issues, it's as if you're going to get embarrassed regardless, right? Yeah. Whether you make that compromise or not, these people already have formed.
You're losing either way.
Yeah, but in one version of that story, you're also losing your own morality and your own rectitude. Whereas in the other, sure, you're still going to be on the sidelines, but at least now you're on the sidelines and people know what your positions are and they can respect you for at least being principled.
I've always liked the philosophy of not trying to bend or please anybody. And the only people that you should... it doesn't mean I like to offend somebody. There's a difference. There's a difference between changing yourself to please somebody versus... And certain people should be pleased. Those people who already share your beliefs and they're better at it than you. By pleasing them, you're actually advancing in your beliefs. That's why pleasing righteous people is ibadah, right? Because it means that you're doing something good. And the proof of that is the Prophet one of the Sahaba saw that the Messenger came to pray behind him and heard the takbir of the Prophet. He said, I made my voice more beautiful for the Prophet. So pleasing the righteous, pleasing those who are in your camp, who are your philosophy of things is good. What we're talking about is pleasing somebody by going against our beliefs. That never works. You lose both sides because you didn't go far enough. And then you went far away from your principles in the first place. You never lose. You're going to lose both people. But that doesn't necessarily mean intentionally offend other people, because people usually conflate that. I don't try to please anyone. Yeah, but you're offending now. And that, I don't think that the line for that is you are allowed to offend the people who are trying to kill you, right? So the IDF right now, the people there are trying, they're fighting them. It is a war. Any enemy in war, you're trying to kill them. They don't no longer deserve not to be offended, right? Like, they have no hukuk to you. Their money is halal for you. Their, whether they're offended or not doesn't make a difference, right? So that's the difference between a lot of people who, quote-unquote, say the truth and other people who they really use the truth as a way to offend others. And that's, you're going away from the, as entertaining as it is entertaining, and it's a great way to let off steam. But it's not the way of the prophets, and you're never going to win when you go away from the way of the prophets, right? Okay, let's take a look at some Q&A here. I like this topic. I don't think it's... I only think that the pro-Harris campaign is a total lose. The abandon Harris, abandon Biden, abandon Harris campaign is principled for sure. And it's likely to not have any great political impact. Even the Democrats are bound by the Israeli money, Israeli AIPAC money. I think they're just going to have to bite the bullet and say, all right, we lost the Muslims, that's it. They can't go without the money. They can't offend the AIPAC too much for the Israel lobby. Yeah.
You don't have to vote for somebody that's on the ballot. You can always
write somebody in.
Mm-hmm.
And my sort of joke campaign that I've been promoting to people, yeah, is, look, if there's no person that you agree with 100% in a certain position or,
yeah,
up for a certain position, just write in Abdullah. I guarantee we've got a cousin somewhere.
That's true. Who is that person?
Eligible to be president, yeah, and he's going to get 3-4% of the vote, and that's going to make a bigger statement than voting, yeah, for all these different parties.
Sometimes there's just no outlet. There's no way to win this, certain things. That's just the fact of life. 1080 caliber Phoenix says, please answer. It's midnight in South India and the guy wants to sleep. All right, 1080 caliber Phoenix, what is your question?
If someone gave an interview for a job and they committed some sin and now they're worried that God will take away the job?
If someone gave an interview for a job, now you've committed some sins.
They're worried that God, what's the question?
Now you're worried that Allah will not grant it to you. It is possible, but make Toba then. Now that you thought about it, khalas, make Toba. But it is possible that the Prophet ﷺ did say sins decrease rizq. But if you make Tawbah, then you should have a good opinion of Allah. That's it. Now you can go to sleep. Because poor guy wants to go to sleep. Is there a bee next to the microphone? No, there's construction. Yeah, there's a lot of construction here. All right, one more question because we got to go. Tim Braman says, is circumcision possible for converts in Maliki school? Because showing the awrah is haram. Yes, it's always haram. So how does he get circumcised? You or your wife can circumcise you. But don't take it from me. Don't go looking for the Amazon.com in-home kit. Because I don't risk taking responsibility for an infection. And ruin your life and ruin your marriage after that. I'm not getting involved in that. But the only people who can do it is you. Who can see your nakedness is you and your wife when there's no reason. And this is not a valid reason to show your nakedness to somebody else. And as a result of that, you may end up not ever getting circumcised. Is there an in-home kit for this? Why don't you look that up, Tim? Or is there an in-home kit? Your phone is charging. He doesn't want that in his algorithm anyway. Go to incognito tab so that Amazon doesn't start sending you circumcision stuff.
There's a brother who says he's a Christian, but he wants to be, he's looking into Islam. So he has some questions, he says. One of them is, there are a number of objections, but the biggest one is that the Quran confirms the previous scriptures, like the Torah, the Gospel, or the Psalms, and even tells people to judge by it, but contradicts all of them.
Okay. Sorry, that's a very good question. The Quran says, when it speaks that the Torah and the Gospels and the Psalms were from God, meaning they originally were from God. It also then tells us that it's been altered or lost. Altered and lost. Originally, it's from God. And when Allah says the Torah, it is filled with light. Yes, originally, right? Before alteration. Secondly, when Allah says to the Jews, judge by your own book, there's two answers to that. Number one, it's a challenge. It's like you don't even judge by, it's like rhetorical. You don't even judge by your own book. Okay? Because they weren't judging according to their own book. And the Prophet ﷺ was told that. They're not judging matters. So he said, all right, bring your book, judge by your own book. Secondly, that is the Sharia. The Sharia does say, Jews, when you live amongst Muslims, you live in your area, judge by your own self. Have your own courts. Have your own courts. Have your own judges amongst you. When Jew versus Jew in a court case, use the Torah. Jew killed a Jew, use the Torah. What? You don't need to bring it to Islamic court. Christian killed a Christian, use the Bible to judge. Use your own Catholic law, Christian law, whatever the denomination is. And that's the millet system, the millah, meaning that you get the Christians to judge. They live together. They have their own leader. That leader reports to the Muslims. You guys got a couple of basic rules as part of the deal here. The deal is, amongst yourselves, you rule by your book and your religion. Number two, don't get involved in politics. Don't try to take power, right? That's not acceptable here. Yeah, Jews and Christians will have served in the past in positions. Not a problem. But you're not going to lead, right? Why? Because the nation is established on the Sharia. How can you follow something you don't even believe in? You've declared that you don't believe in it. So an Islamic Muslim-run state and an Islamic state cannot be led by a non-Muslim. Can a corporation be led by a communist? Right? Can a capitalist rule over China? Allegedly or supposedly communist, not allegedly, but supposedly communist country? Same thing, right? Can a Catholic rule over Israel, which is supposed to be a Jewish state? Of course not. So likewise, but Christians can have their own town. They rule themselves. They live by themselves. But the moment you intersect now, you go out of the state boundaries or you have an intersection with a Muslim, then at that point, you will be judged by the Sharia. Okay? Irtiza says, look forward to seeing you back in Australia and we can meet Muhammad Hablos. Yes, I'd love to meet Muhammad Hablos. He's a great and sincere preacher, does a lot of great work. Of course, now he's in the Meme Hall of Fame, as we all know.
I know you guys heard that.
No, he's in the Meme Hall of Fame, no doubt about that. I
have it here.
He's got it. I was talking with a guy who works in LA. He tells me he's in this field of producing podcasts and stuff. And he says to me, I'm on my phone, like from the moment I get up to when I sleep. And like a minute doesn't pass without me being on my phone. And so he says, this is one of the best Hall of Fame memes, right? It's all, there's no, and these guys like, yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I got to run. Jazakum Allah khairan. We will see you all on Tuesday. However, first, we will see you on Saturday. 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Put your notifications on. Click that bell, whatever they say. And you could listen to the gala from your home and support us from your home. And inshallah, benefit the soup kitchen for us to get to 7 days a week feeding the fuqara. And you will post a launch good link. سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك نشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت نستغفرك ونتوب إليك والعصر إن الإنسان لفي خسر إلا الذين آمنوا وعملوا الصالحات وتواصوا بالحق وتواصوا بالصبر والسلام عليكم ورحمة الله.
sweetly call.